This is the Drive and Dish Podcast. Talking about NBA news, stats, and fantasy. To start it off, it's Tim Tompkins.
And like, PJ Tucker's a player that you can put on Kyrie Irving. You can also put him on Kevin Love, and you can also put him on LeBron James. Like, that kind of player defensively is incredibly valuable.
Kevin Rayfuse.
Good, but I don't want to be stuck in the limbo of mediocrity. I don't want to gamble that maybe one day there's a Harden trade out there. I don't want to gamble that some team is going to be stupid and let a Steve Nash walk out the door and go to Phoenix the way Dallas did, where you stumble upon a superstar.
And Justin Kuzak.
A lot of the times, from my understanding, is close games are won by the coach calling those inbound plays and drawing up a quick sideline play for him.
Well, if you like that, you're going to love this.
Well, if anything, this is the point where we all sit there and get real excited.
Let's do this!
Let's go.
As of today, if you're listening to this episode, it is an unofficial holiday. One of... You know, if you're a math fan, it's one of your favorite days of the year. And it's a delicious day of the year, let's be honest. It is March 14th or National Pie Day.
Oh, yeah. I'm excited because, one, I like pie, and we've recently found out that pie is not exclusive to pizza. You know what I'm saying?
Is pizza sort of everybody, like, if there was a poll taken of everybody's favorite food, would pizza be right at the top?
I feel like it has to be. I mean, it's number one for me.
Right.
Tacos is a very close two.
Yeah, because, I mean, we've had the debate before about if you had to eat one style of food every day for the rest of your life. I believe we all said pizza, tacos coming in
yeah.
a second.
Yeah, like tacos, pizza. What was that? I think our third was like Chinese food.
Yeah, I don't remember. But
yeah.
Would that be the astounding majority of people's opinions?
I think a lot of Americans would eat pizza every day.
Not just Americans. Like when I traveled to Romania, the pizza was really popular there. It's just a different style of pizza.
You traveled to Romania to eat pizza?
No, but while I was in Romania, I had Romanian
pizza. What were
you
doing in Romania? I've never heard this story.
It's really not very interesting. I went to Dracula's castle.
Really?
What for? Just to
see it.
Just
dude, that's interesting. Not a lot of people go to Romania on vacation. You're selling yourself short there, Tim. But but when we're talking about, should we actually talk about pi the number? It goes on. It's an infinite number. They discovered a new digit
last year. But it's a whole
math
thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Pi the movie.
Yeah.
3.14.
And then, I mean, it keeps going. I know other people can rattle off all these digits of pi. We're not going
to
do
want
that.
Want me to Google
it?
I'll just go until it stops.
No, I mean, that's fine. I think we'll be okay. but anyway, so Pizza Hut, they have, speaking of pizza and pie, they have their own interesting take on Pie Day. And it could be a pretty delicious one, actually.
Yeah, so basically what Pizza Hut is doing is that they're going to put up three math questions that started at 8 a.m. this morning. And if you can answer those three math questions, you get free pizza for a year.
For a year?
Yeah.
Holy crap.
So if any of our listeners were able to solve these three math questions... Please tweet us, and if you happen to be in the Jacksonville area, please take us out to pizza.
Yeah, we'd really appreciate it.
Are they going to be hard questions? Because I feel like you can't just, like...
They would have to be.
Yeah, they're going to be, like, impossible.
They're not going to be... Like, Pizza Hut's not going to just casually give away your pizza and have the math question be like, what is 8 times 9?
I'm going to try and figure out the questions. I want free pizza for a year. I'm poor. I work in radio.
But the problem is...
It's business.
It's like time... Is your time worth the amount of effort you're going to have to put into those math problems?
Dude, it's a year of free pizza.
I know, but it's math. It sucks.
It's a year of free pizza.
Math is literally the worst.
Yeah, basically, every person that gets it right gets a $1,600 Pizza Hut gift card.
Yeah.
That's fine.
It seems like a business investment. My time is worth $1,600.
Also, though,
pizza.
At what point are you just going to be so overeating Pizza Hut pizza?
Oh, dude, it's pizza. It would probably take at least a year, but at that point, I'll be good because I'll run out of free pizza.
Oh, dude, I mean, once or twice a week, I'd order a pizza every single night. And look at all the publicity that they're getting from like people like us talking about their promotion.
Yeah, seriously, we're talking about
to our millions of listeners.
Right.
Yes.
Hey, we're number 7 on iTunes.
I know. How exciting is that?
That is very exciting. But seriously, the math is a good use of time, and know what else is a good use of time? This podcast, the Drive and Dish NBA podcast. My name is Kevin Rayfuse. Joining me to my left, my co-host, Tim Tompkins.
Ball don't lie.
And behind the boards, keeping us honest as always, our producer, Justin Kuzart.
Dream big, work hard, stay focused, and surround yourself with good people.
Is that another LeBron subtweet?
Oh, no. I saw this. It's a guard. Is it CJ McCollum?
No.
I can't believe you would have known that generic tweet and who it was. That would have been impressive.
I mean, I follow a bunch of...
It came after someone's very, very exciting game-winning shot.
Ricky Rubio.
Yep.
Oh my god, dude. The Thunder fourth quarter woes just continue.
Dude,
I can't believe they let Rubio hit three, win the game.
Here's my question though. Was that the most wide open? Was that the most clutch shot Ricky Rubio has ever hit in his career?
The thing about Ricky Rubio that a lot of people forget is, yeah, he can't shoot, but he's actually been a pretty decent 3-point shooter.
Can't leave him wide open.
He can't hit a mid-range shot to save his life. He's no DeMar DeRozan. Don't get it twisted. But the dude can hit threes at a league average clip.
Yeah, no, I agree. It was an exciting. I was watching. I was just like, man, the Thunder cannot catch a freaking break.
No, they can't play in the fourth quarter. Is what their problem is. But that's not really the point of this. Every single week, you guys leave us a review on iTunes, and it really helps us out. As we said earlier, because of your reviews, we are now the number 7 NBA podcast on iTunes,
which is amazing. How did this happen?
Well, we started below 50, and then we moved up to like in the 30s, and then in the 20s, and then I think we got to 13 a couple of months ago. But regardless, we want to give you guys a shout out for giving us a shout out and read your review on the show.
Absolutely. And this week's review comes from America. It is called Drive and Delish. It's a 5-star review by Gabe Is Best. Gabe says, great podcast. Keep the tasty treats coming.
Oh, well, that's very nice, Gabe. Thank you. Short and sweet.
Yeah,
can't
short
really
and sweet
to that.
The point. Hey, man,
we are keeping the tasty treats coming. It's a positive. We have not one, not two, but 3 episodes coming for you guys this week.
I see what you did there.
I did. It's a basketball joke. Get it?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Why don't we get some news?
Tell me something I do not know. Do not know.
Now. If you do not know the present, how can you claim to know the future?
Now on NBA News on the Drive and Dish podcast.
We need to know now.
All right, first in your news, Blake Griffin is still out due to a quad injury. Apparently, it's not his hand. He suffered the quad injury on Christmas Day and was only supposed to miss about 2 weeks for it. Brandon Dawson was arrested Sunday morning on a felony domestic violence charge. Dawson is 23 years old, being held on a $50,000 bond at Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department. Dawson was recalled to the Clippers from the NBA D-League Saturday morning. It's been reported that the Pelicans are unlikely to re-signed Eric Gordon this offseason. The Pelicans were shopping him at the trade deadline, but were unable to get a deal done. Fun fact, Gordon has missed 115 games due to various injuries during his first 3 seasons with the Pelicans. Jay Crowder is going to miss at least 2 weeks due to a high ankle sprain. Crowder fell awkwardly during a fast break layup against the Rockets on Friday. Crowder has been phenomenal for the Celtics this year, starting all 66 games and averaging 14 points, 5 rebounds, 1 assist, and almost 2 steals over 31 minutes per game. Andre Iguodala is also out at least 2 weeks with a sprained left ankle. Continuing on the injury trend, Mike Conley is also out 3 to 4 weeks with Achilles tendonitis. He missed 3 previous games with left foot soreness. Monty Williams is going to miss the remainder of OKC's season after the passing of his wife Ingrid last month. And lastly in your news, continuing with the injury trend, Jahlil Okafor is out for the rest of the season to have surgery to repair his torn meniscus in his right knee. And that's your news for this week.
Something.
So I don't know if you guys know this. My parents, my family lives up in Philadelphia. I feel like I've mentioned that before. And
I feel like they might know that.
They might know that. If not, now you do. My dad is a big Flyers fan. And, you know, hockey's going on right now. And so he was talking about how he was trying to go to a hockey game the other night. And I told him, you know, how much did you pay for the tickets? And he was like, oh, I don't know. They were like $150 for a specific thing. And then I started asking him, I was like, oh, well, how much was it when you clicked on the ticket the first time? He was like, oh, it was like $99. And I was like, so what happened? It was like a printing fee, a
convenience fee, whatever that means.
Right. So it was this whole thing. And I was like, Dad, you have a son who works on a podcast who is sponsored by SeatGeek right now, who they don't do that, and you would have gotten $20 off. And he's like, well, that's what happens because you only call me on Sundays. We don't talk in between the weeks.
I only call my parents on Sundays. Well, I talk to them a little bit during the week, but I have an annual Sunday phone call,
yeah,
man.
Annual Sunday phone call.
Weekly. I guess it's not annual.
Weekly, yeah. But so I told him, and he's planning on going to another game sometime this week where he downloaded the SeatGeek app. We are sponsored by SeatGeek. If you download the app and you go into the settings, it'll say type in a promo code. If you type it in, type in D-I-S-H, like drive and dish, Dish. If you type that in, you will get $20 off your first purchase. You don't even have to buy anything right up front. Like, if you're thinking, oh, maybe I won't want anything until, you know, Adele's in town or something like that.
Yeah, that was the best you could come up with.
She's popular.
She's popular. So if Adele's coming to town, the tickets are like, I think they're at like $500 right now. We can at least take $20 off of your ticket. And the cool thing is there's a little green dot. If it's green, in the dot where you can see where the seat is, that means you're getting a good deal. If it's red, it means you're getting a bad deal. Maybe pick somewhere else. It's kind of cool. Help out the podcast by downloading the SeatGeek app and typing in the promo code DISH.
So Derek Fisher finally spoke out, and it sort of reminded me of a Players Tribune-esque article. And I actually hadn't realized that he hadn't said anything about all the drama that happened between him and Matt Barnes. You guys got a chance to read it. What were your thoughts on this?
Before we get too into it, I'll save that for later. I didn't literally get anything from the article. It sounds like a whole person being like, guys, stop making fun of me. That was mean to do.
And really? That's how you took it?
The only other thing I got from it is that he doesn't care about what people are saying about him.
That's what you got out of it?
He said it like six times in the article, mm-hmm. that he just doesn't care. I mean, the one part I did like is when he talked about his girlfriend, I think her name's Gloria, mm-hmm. when he talked about how he was upset that everyone was talking to her, talking about her as like a prize.
Right.
Or like
an object.
How she didn't have a choice in the matter or didn't have this. I liked that. The rest of it just sounded like, okay, that's your side of the story, bro. Of course management's not going to come and tell you, hey, we didn't like that you were doing this, this, and this. They're just going to tell you to get the hell out. Mm-hmm. That's my theory.
A lot of people, for better or for worse, I mean, mostly for worse, but I think a lot of people looked at Derek Fisher's firing and almost wondered how much, you know, in a city like New York City, where you're put under the microscope so much more than in other places, you know, I think a lot of people wondered if the off-the-court drama didn't have a role in a little bit. And I think this is just Fisher trying to clear the air. You know, he hasn't said anything about it. And it's one, you know, staying above it when it's something small that just kind of goes away is one, you know, way to go about it. But the fact of the matter is, like, this story hasn't gone away. I mean, how many times have we talked about it in all its different elements? And for better or for worse, like, it is gossipy. Like,
if anything, I feel like he just brought it back up. Like, I was just starting to forget about Derek Fisher firing, and then he brought it back up with the article. I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but
I'll never forget about this story simply for the fact that Matt Barnes drove 90 miles to come and get it. He drove 90 miles.
I'm going to make a Spotify playlist called Matt Barnes' 95-mile drive, right. And it's just going to be like amp-up music.
I just picture, like, you know how whenever there's a movie and then there's just a giant action scene when they all have that typical, like, metal riff in the background to get everybody pumped up? I just picture that on repeat for 90 minutes of just Matt Barnes driving down the highway.
Well, I wanted to give a shout-out to our one Twitter follower, Patrick Waring.
Our one Twitter follower?
Our very one. No, one of our Twitter followers. Patrick Waring, at Patrick Waring, he had the tweet of the night the other night. He made me laugh so hard. He took the tweet we have about Derek's article being posted, and he said, Derek Fisher doesn't care about this.
I thought, I'm pretty sure what he took the tweet of was Matt Barnes posting his first triple-double.
Oh, yes, that's right. Yeah, okay, yeah,
and
yeah.
He did that right after this came out. I mean, I took this article a lot differently, and I'm going to read a couple of things from the article that I took out of it. One of it was when Derek Fisher said, look, I get it. Salacious gossip sells papers and garners clicks. But when you publish outright lies, I have the right to defend myself. And when he said that,
that's true.
When he said that, I was thinking, you know what? A lot of this story was about, like, being in the media and us working in different facets of radio, that there's a lot of stories that just, you know, they're interesting, they're easy to talk about.
So this example is, we work in radio, and one of my coworkers was talking about Taylor Swift, because I'm in Talk 40, that's what happens. We talk about Taylor Swift. She did a whole, like, 21 things you don't know about me type thing, mm-hmm. where she did a Facebook Live video, and part of it, she said she had a pet hermit crab. So my coworker said, Taylor Swift has crabs.
Yeah, no, like, I saw that, and I was like, I don't know what the hell is going on. A couple other things that I wanted to mention that he pointed out was, he said that, and I like this part, I like that he explained this, because when we just heard the story, we were like, man, Derek Fisher going and dating Matt Barnes' ex, blah, 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 it's so messed up. But he said
they weren't friends.
When Gloria and I started dating, she and Matt had already been separated and living apart for more than a year. Same thing for me. My wife and I were long separated. She was in LA and I was in New York. Mm-hmm. Matt and Gloria were not trying to work things out, and I certainly wasn't seeing her behind Matt's back or in secret. He went on to say, speaking of his relationship with Matt Barnes, during the time that they were teammates, they never had any issues and never had any real relationship off the court either. Their kids didn't hang out. Their families didn't interact. There were no birthday parties. There were no post-game dinners. We weren't friends, and we had no mutual friends. That's important.
No, that is important because right. If you like, we had talked about it, bro code and all that stuff. Yeah. When that first happened, we're like, dude, you don't go date your right. friends back. But if they weren't friends,
they weren't friends and they weren't together. And then he talked about the story leaked. Then suddenly, the story of the quote unquote fight leaked to the media. I'll let you speculate on who leaked it and why and the nature of their character. And I thought about that too. How did that story get out?
Matt Barnes.
Right.
Yeah.
So Matt Barnes said, I drove his house, I beat him up, blah, blah, blah.
Matt Barnes went through, it felt like it was like a month, month and a half where he was like just kind of in the news. Mm-hmm. Where he was just in the news making weird claims about basketball players or making like predictions about things. I remember thinking, I was like, what's Matt Barnes doing? Why is he suddenly like in the news all the time?
Right. Derek Fisher said in the article, he's like, look, I've been in the media, I've been in the NBA for 20 years and think about my character. I didn't. I thought about Matt Barnes Derek Fisher when he was playing for the Lakers. I thought about how good he was when he was that the guard coming off the bench for OKC and how professional he was through that entire time. And then I thought about Matt Barnes and I'm like, I can't say the same thing about Matt Barnes.
No, I don't want to say he's a dirty player, but I know when I watched him at the Sixers game this year, everyone was pissed off because he was doing cheap shots. But what I wanted to point out is, and I didn't think about this until you just said that, is back when we first started the podcast and I was overweight, one of the people watching them play, I think it was like probably his last year in the NBA, watching Derek Fisher play, I was like, man, this guy is so fit. He was one of those...
Dude, really, really.
He's one of those guys that I'm like, holy crap, he is so physically mm-hmm. fit, and he was one of the people that I was like, I want to look like Derek Fisher. I want to be mm-hmm. that jacked.
Dude, you gotta shave your head then too, man.
Well, yeah, I can't grow a beard. He's got that little scruff going. I can't do the scruff. But the other one I liked, there was a quote that he said, because Matt and Gloria's children were present, there was no fight.
Right, and I thought about that too, and I'm like, yeah, that's the adult.
Yeah, but also he's implying if the kids weren't there, I would have put a whoop ass on him.
Well, yeah, of course everybody's going to imply that. Nobody's going to be like, yo, Matt Barnes would have whooped my ass. Like,
no, I don't think that's what he was implying. I think he was implying that, look, we're adults and we don't get into physical confrontations in front of our kids.
Yeah, I mean, Derek Fisher has been a mature guy his entire career, and that's why I think he's trying to be here. He's trying to be the mature guy out of all this and say that, you know, Matt Barnes is a hothead who went after me. And I mean, is that surprising to anyone? Is that, you know, I think of course it's believable. Listen, at the end of the day, nobody was there other than Matt Barnes and Derek Fisher. And there's three sides to every story. And so are the fans ever going to know the truth? No. But at the end of the day, like, this is just not that important. It's just kind of entertaining.
Well, I guess it brings up the question, though. Or do you see Derek Fisher getting another coaching position in the NBA?
I think he can down the road. I don't think he's going to necessarily. I think Derek Fisher at times wasn't really able to separate. I put it this way. I think when Derek Fisher was the Knicks coach, I think a lot of times that he still acted like he was a player.
There wasn't enough
time for him.
And I think
that's, you know, Derek Fisher is just out of the league. I think that's a really tough transition to make going from playing to coaching. You know, it's not something that just happens overnight. You know, there have been a lot of great players who have been terrible coaches and vice versa. So I think Derek Fisher will take time. I think he's a well-respected NBA veteran who is on multiple championship teams, whose pedigree speaks for itself. And I think eventually he'll get another shot down the road if he wants it. I just think right now, I think Derek Fisher's just got to kind of, you know, step back a little bit. And
take a step away.
Yeah, and I think they'll be good for him in the long run.
Let the dust settle.
I think he'll get an assistant coaching job.
That's actually what I wrote here. So I said, I don't think he'd be a head coach right away, but maybe an assistant. Mm-hmm. I could definitely see that for sure.
So let me ask you guys a question before we move on to this and we go into hot takes from Reddit. after reading this, whose story are you buying?
I think you have to take both stories with a grain of salt and kind of combine them into one, you know? Maybe Matt Barnes felt slighted that the fact that his teammate was dating his ex-girlfriend, which still, if you look at it, they were teammates. I guess you should take that into consideration. But at the same time, maybe Matt Barnes overreacted a bit too. I think it's kind of like almost like how a judge does it. You hear both sides of the story. Now you combine them into one true story.
I mean, I think it's probably, yeah, I think the third side of the story is always the right. I think that I don't think everything Matt Barnes said is 100% true, and I don't think everything Derek Fisher said is 100% true. I mean, that's the way we see this in real life all the time. I think whatever that third side of the story is probably right. I think there's elements of truth to both players. I'm not going to call either one of them outright liars.
After reading it, my thought is Derek Fisher sounded like the adult in this. Totally, I'm going with that. I feel like Derek Fisher told the real side of the story. But you are listening to the Driving Dish NBA podcast. Tim Tompkins, Kevin Rafused, Justin Kuzart. If you download the SeatGeek app, make sure you put in promo code DISH. Also, add us on Instagram at Drive and Dish Podcast.
Don't delay hot.
It's time for hot takes from Reddit.
Hot, right?
Hot take number one.
Tim, you're going to absolutely love this. And when I saw it, I smiled because I was so excited. Irving and Lillard are worse defenders than James Harden.
No. There was that one play that I watched a couple weeks ago where somebody just drove right by him and James Harden was a help defender.
And they called it when your remote controller breaks during NBA 2K.
Right, and it was just like a flap of the arm. And then there was that whole thing that came out with James Harden looking for the clause in his contract that says he has to play defense.
So then here's my other question.
I mean, Lillard's not a great defender either.
That's what I was going to say. Are Irving and Lillard just that good at offense and okay at defense that it kind of gets, they don't get crapped on for it, I guess?
No, the difference with Irving and Lillard is that they make some sort of attempt.
Effort.
Mm-hmm. In my mind, where James Harden literally watches guys run by him.
Yeah. Well, okay. Well, it's just like, I'm trying to think, is there anybody, who would be the second worst right behind?
I mean, it depends what you're talking about. If you're talking about like a guard or, like a forward guarding somebody, because I mean, Big Al, for example, is just like, he's a black hole when he's playing down. Cantor trying to defend somebody. Cantor, great rebounder, but he can't guard a pick and roll to save his life.
It's also just the narrative now. Like, once the internet gets the hold of a narrative, like the James Harden is bad at defense narrative, while as potential accurate as it may be, like, it's never going to go away because people vine James Harden's defense. Like, nobody's quite vined Kyrie Irving's defense yet. Like, everybody gives Lillard a pass because when Lillard's in heat check mode, he's just unstoppable.
Mm-hmm. Well, I feel like with Harden, it did dissipate a bit last year when he started playing some defense.
Yeah, no, because you definitely saw a lot less than you did this year. Like, this year, it's all back. It's there. I saw a story saying one of the reasons the Thunder let James Harden go in 2012 was because they thought he was partying too much. And I remember, not this offseason, but the offseason before, you didn't really hear the story of James Harden like out there partying as much as you did this one. You heard him out there with Khloe Kardashian, out there at the bars, hanging out, dating her. Like, he kind of regressed almost and started going out again and being belligerent. Right,
well, whatever the Thunder want to say to make themselves feel better about that trade, but let's not write revisionist history.
That's a legitimate concern when you're talking about character and you're deciding between players.
Well, sure it is, the Thunder trade for James Harden is horrible. It's one of the worst trades of all time. They didn't get close to value back in between it. They probably broke up a team that was on pace to win the finals. And, like, listen, I understand James Harden's partying is a concern, but shut the hell up, OKC. Like, don't try to give me this hindsight crap. Like, hindsight is the trade. It's terrible. It's always been terrible.
I don't think they were justifying the trade. They're legitimately stating this is part of the reason for it. And if you're building team character, if that's important to your team.
And they were a young team at the time. You had to make sure that not all your players were being dumb and all going out to the bar or the strip club after the games.
I mean, I don't necessarily agree that obviously it wasn't the right move when you look at the talent differential that you got. But building a team with character is important.
Yeah, I agree with that, too. But I just I think that the James Harden character issues are overblown. I think his not playing defense is more of a concern than his off the court antics. The guy's never been arrested or anything.
Hot take number two.
Tim, you will appreciate this one as well. Devin Booker, as he continues his second half rampage through the NBA, will be the best player from this year's draft class.
Towns.
Dude. Have you seen Towns? Like, oh my gosh. He hit this one like fadeaway jumper at the free throw line the other day, and I was just like, Jesus, man.
No, dude, Towns is so good. There's a bunch of really good players from this draft. I think that Devin Booker's going to end up being a top five player from the draft if he ends up. There's a lot of players that are taking ninth and tenth in a lot of drafts, not that Devin Booker was, but end up being really, really good players. And I think that he'll be a great player one day. I think Devin Booker's going to be a star one day, but is he going to be the best player out of this draft? Absolutely not. I mean, Karl Anthony Towns all the way.
Completely agree, 100%. Yeah. I think Booker, you know, I like Booker a lot. I've been high on Booker since he was drafted. I think he's going to be, I think he is playing better than even I projected him to play.
It's his basketball IQ. That's the part that's surprising. It's how well he can handle the ball. He's not just a shooter.
Well, and more importantly, you know, we talk about this all the time, but shooting is one of those things that is at a premium right now in the NBA. At the end of the day, like, Devin Booker could thrive just off the fact that he's probably the best shooter in that draft class, and because we know how valuable three-point shooting is. I don't think he's better than Towns. I think Towns' upside is, where does it stop? Because I don't know what Towns' ceiling is right now. Towns' ceiling is off the charts. The guy does everything well. He plays defense. He gets boards. He shoots the three.
Well, you're talking about positional scarcity too. When you're talking about bigs that can do that, rather than shooting guards that can do that. There's always going to be shooting guards that can shoot and handle the ball. There's not always going to be bigs who can step out, hit the three, and defend well.
Hot take number three.
Jeff Green has been and still is the most inconsistent man in the NBA.
Dude, did you see the thing we tweeted out? The roller coaster? Funny.
Well, that's how he's there's players, and I'm forgetting the term for this. It's a math term. But it has to do with your regression to the mean, essentially. So let's say you have a player that shoots 40% because one game he's shooting 70% and the other game he's shooting 20%.
Right.
And then you have another player who just consistently shoots 40%. Jeff Green is player number A in that scenario, where he has one great game and then one terrible game. One great game, one terrible game.
5 points, then 18 points, then 6 points, then 22 points, then 7 points, then 0 points, then 14 points. Like, right. It's like, dude.
He went from 0 points one night to 23 points the next night. That is amazing. That was such a good graphic, by the way. I was cracking.
If you want to check that out, hit us up on our Instagram page. It's there for
dude,
you.
Classic. But I mean, yeah, that's been Jeff Green's problem his whole career, is I think we know what Jeff Green is, and we know that if you're looking for a guy off the bench who can get you buckets and volume, Jeff Green is that guy. But if you're I don't think, you know, that's a big reason why Jeff Green, I don't think, has been able to stick on a lot of the teams. I mean, how many teams has Jeff Green been on now in the last 2 to 3 years? And you're listening to the Drive and Dish NBA podcast. Kevin Rafuse, Tim Tompkins, Justin Kuzart. Make sure you follow us on Twitter at Drive and Dish NBA.
So I think, Tim, was it you that posted this to our Twitter page? And it actually, like my phone got blown up with notifications of so many people putting their inputs in this.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting debate, and I don't think that it's one that we've had before.
Right, and so what I did is I saw that you had a tweet of your top five backup point guards, and I decided that I wasn't going to look at it until I had made mine, and we pretty much didn't agree on anything.
What, you and you? Oh, really?
I was like, except for number one. I feel like the general consensus number one is going to be the same player. I don't want to give anything away, but
well, part of what I was looking at when choosing my top five backup point guards, and Kevin and I talked about this a little bit before you got here, Justin, but part of it was thinking, are there any of these point guards that could be the first, like the starting point guard?
Okay, I kind of took that a little bit into consideration.
And that's why I think we're going to be. I mean, can we just say it in front of, like, out in front of unanimously? Like, we all agree Dennis Schroeder is the best backup point guard, right?
Yeah, I think we all have agreed. 11 points per game, 2 assists, 2 rebounds. PER of 17.15. Yeah, I mean, and if you're looking at other backup point guards, most of them are around the 13 or 14.
Yeah, and we're talking about Schroeder getting, you know, we're talking about Schroeder getting a max contract to play starter minutes. I mean, this is a guy who a lot of teams are looking at as who could be their starting point guard of the future.
I want the Sixers to get him,
yeah,
honestly.
And there are a lot of point guards out here who, I mean, this is a nice list. Like, I think every guard on this list is a really nice NBA player. But I think that he's one of the guys where I think he's
ready.
Pretty unanimous one in my book. But then I think the 2 through 5 as we get through this will be interesting. So I guess, you know, why don't we just, you know, let's look at our list. Mine personally is not in order. It's still a little flexible other than Schroeder. I've got a general order down, but it's up for it. It grabs right now. But, you know, what do we got? Who are some names on the list?
Well, with Schroeder, I did this with a lot of them too, that part of what I was looking at that I took into consideration was per 36, because I didn't feel like it was an accurate way to compare point guards by a per game basis.
Yeah, because if one's playing like 30 minutes and the other one's playing 15. You
right,
know?
Then it's just, mm-hmm. so I did per 36s, and Dennis Schroeder's per 36s are 19 points and 8 assists. So his per 36s are great. Number two on my list is Jeremy Lin. I think Jeremy Lin has been fantastic this year, especially looking at 16 points. And
he's definitely a part of the Hornets' success.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, a lot of the time, too, is he ends up playing that that two-guard spot, which, you know, lets Kemba Walker play off the ball a
bit
more.
It's really funny. I met myself and my former college roommate, Alex Hyman. What up, Al? We're having this conversation yesterday after you posted on Facebook, because he texted me and said, Marcus Smart, best backup point guard in the league. He's a Celtics fan, so obviously there's a little, you know,
bias,
a little bias and sarcasm to it. But it's funny. We didn't bring up Jeremy Lin at all. And right after I said Dennis Schroeder when we were talking about this podcast, I go, you know, Jeremy Lin's had a really nice year, and I just haven't thought of it at all. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Jeremy Lin has played a lot of great minutes for a Hornets team that is just, we talked about this team last week. They're surging right now, and a big part of that has been Jeremy Lin coming off the bench. I mean, it's been a really, you know, good part of this team.
Oh, Jeremy Lin's been super solid.
You know who I have at my number two?
No.
And I have a feeling you're both going to shoot me down in about a second. Hmm. Zach LaVine.
Oh, he's not a point guard.
As a point guard. He is listed on the team as a point guard.
He is a shooting guard. I don't care what they list him as. I think the reason why he's been playing the point guard position is just to get his playmaking ability up. I mean, Zach LaVine's been great, but he's not a point guard. I mean, that's like saying Devin Booker's been playing backup point guard too. That doesn't make Devin Booker a point guard.
He might still be a point guard. He's just a ball dominant point guard like you don't like.
Right.
All right. So who else we got on?
Wait, hold on. Who's your number two?
Probably Corey Joseph. I like what he did for San Antonio last year. I think he's put in some really good minutes for the Toronto team this year. I think, you know, that bench depth has been something they've needed. He's given them, you know, we mentioned Toronto needed to improve on defense after last year. I think he's been a really solid defensive player for them. So I'm going to go Corey Joe.
Yeah, I had Corey Joseph a little bit lower on the list. I like him a lot, and I especially like what the Raptors are able to do. They're playing a lot of three-guard lineups with him, DeRozan.
See, I have Corey Joseph number four on my list.
Yeah, and Kyle Lowry. Well, part of Kyle Lowry's success is that Kyle Lowry can now play off the ball.
Right.
Because they're doing the dual point guard lineups. And one thing that I think that we're forgetting about the Raptors, too, this season with Corey Joseph is he's played 41 playoff games. So we've talked about...
He's got that experience.
Yeah, and how valuable is that going to be? And I just think that he's been so instrumental to the offense. Dude, but I had him a little bit lower than three.
Dude, you heard Drake, man. He said, I get a ring and I bring it home like I'm Corey Joe.
Yeah,
will he bring it home to Toronto this year?
My number three was Patty Mills, though. I think he's been phenomenal, and he's also he's been really good when Tony Parker's been resting, and I just think that he's come playoff time that Patty Mills is going to be playing some big minutes, you know, just because Tony Parker can't guard anybody.
Know who I had number two or number three? Trey Burke.
Really?
Really?
Yes.
Why? I'm surprised.
11
that
points
too.
Per game. He's got a PER of 14.18. And like I said, I was my whole thing is I was trying to see the averages of PER for a backup point guard. And they all seem to be around 13 or 12 for the higher up, you know, top 10, top 15.
Which is below league average, too.
Which is below league average. But Trey Burke was above that. He has the same, pretty much the same PER as Zach LaVine, like I was saying.
He didn't even get my honorable mentions.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't have him anywhere near my list.
No, I think that the point guard situation with the Jazz has been so awful that if he...
Shelvin Mack has been doing all right, though.
I love that pickup.
I do, too.
Overall, if he was any good with as badly as the Jazz needed a point guard, that he would be their starting point guard. And he's not. He's not for a reason.
And that's why he's a good second, a backup. That's why he's on the top five.
Yeah. I mean, if I have Corey Joe at two, I'll put Jeremy Lin at three, and then Patty Mills would have been my four.
Because I already said number four is Corey Joseph, guess who I have number five? I feel like I'm going to get shot down again.
Mm. Oh, boy.
Brandon Jennings,
He hasn't really played that much this year. Brandon Jennings can cross any player over.
It's disgusting how he can do it.
But he can't shoot. The Orlando Magic, for better or for worse, they haven't been any better since they got him.
The whole thing is it's giving Elfrid Payton rest. And that's the main point that they need to do is Elfrid Payton was just getting run into the ground being the only point guard that could come in.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I can see why you would do that. But with how he's played this year, I just coming back from that Achilles injury, I couldn't put
another
him
another. Yeah, well, that was my whole thing is I have him down there because he hasn't been able to play the whole season. Another person I wanted to put on there, but injuries, Tyler Johnson. I think he's been very good for the Heat, but
well,
he's
considering
hurt.
Where they got him from, too.
Exactly. So I really like Tyler Johnson. Sucks that he got injured. If he had been continuing to play the way he was, he'd probably be on my five.
Well,
for
the
this
two guys we haven't mentioned that I want to highlight are number one is Marcus Smart. And I think in terms of upside, I think Marcus Smart is right up there with Schroeder in terms of what he can
be. Yeah, he's just got that hot head. And even I've been seeing reports from the Celtics saying that they're worried he can't keep his cool.
Well, that's been Marcus Smart's knock all the way coming out of college.
Yeah.
So he's a very passionate dude. At the same time, like, I think he can add a lot to a basketball theme. I think he's helped Boston get that identity of toughness, especially on the defensive end, that has really helped them succeed this year, and he buys into that team mentality. You know, I think Marcus Smart is a potentially starting point guard. And so I think it would be neglecting to not mention him. And I also want to mention Sean Livingston.
He was my fifth.
Yeah, I mean, Sean Livingston, we're talking about a guy. I mean, he's one of the all-time NBA kind of redemption stories where with an injury like that. But I'm not looking to harp on the past. I mean, Livingston, you know, we talk about the Warriors' depth. That's one of the big things that we always like to highlight when we talk about how great the Warriors are. It's not just how great Steph Curry is and how great Klay Thompson is and Draymond Green and a lot of these other guys. But I mean, one of the Warriors' way that they beat these teams is that even when Curry has an off night every once in a while, which is rare, but you know, that their bench guys help them out. The role players, the Harrison Barneses, the Andre Iguodalas. But I Sean Livingston, he brings stability to that second unit. He's responsible with the ball. He gets it done. He's a really solid NBA veteran presence, and I think he needs to be in this conversation.
My only problem with Sean Livingston is at what point does it hurt you that your point guard isn't even a three-point threat?
I don't think it hurts him.
You don't think it does?
No, I think that the Warriors have enough shooting. And you don't need every single player to be a three-point threat. I mean, Sean Livingston's greatest strength is his size and that he can post up two guards and point guards. And like Kevin said, he's responsible with the ball. So I had him a solid fifth. But yeah, he's shooting 16% from three. I also want to give a honorable mentions to Marcus Smart, Ramon Sessions, and Huertas with the Lakers. I love what Huertas does, but I couldn't put him in my top five.
Okay.
So you guys want to recap your list?
We could also talk about DJ Augustine being a good mention.
Yeah, Kevin had him. I'm not a DJ Augustine.
No,
he's an honorable mention guy for me. I'm not going to keep harping. We've talked about this for a long time. So I guess my list, I go Schroeder 1, Corey Joseph 2, Jeremy Lin 3, Patty Mills 4, and then let's say I'm going to go for pure upside. I'm going to go Marcus Smart 5, and then I'll go Sean Livingston as my honorable mention.
For mine, I got Schroeder, like we said, Zach LaVine, Trey Burke, Corey Joseph, and Jeremy Lin. I'll move Brandon Jennings out because of injuries.
Whew, man, we are so different on this.
That's what I was saying.
My one is Schroeder, my two is Lin, my three is Patty Mills, my four is Corey Joseph, and my number five is Sean Livingston.
You're listening to the Drive and Dish NBA podcast. Kevin Rafuse, Tim Tompkins, Justin Kuzar. Check out our website, driveanddishpodcast.com. It's hard to believe, but last week, seeing as the Lakers are now officially mathematically eliminated from the playoffs, we watched...
Two teams are just mathematical. It's just the Sixers and the...
It took the Lakers a lot longer than the Sixers. Yeah. Like, the Sixers were like 3 weeks ago.
I keep looking for that little zero on NBA.com or whatever when on the standings for the teams that are eliminated.
Well, good news, guys. The Sixers won their ninth game against the Nets this week, so we can now tie for the worst team of all time.
That's great. I saw that you guys won, and then I saw it was against the Nets.
Yeah. Well, you know, you got to be somebody. Like,
did you see Sosta off the backboard to himself?
I did. Sixers find it, but it's funny because the Sixers at one point up until the Bulls set the record at 72-10, the Sixers had the all time record for a long time as having the worst season in NBA history and the best season in NBA history. It's pretty crazy.
That's hard to do.
Yeah, it really is. Just like, man, talk about peaks and valleys. But
hey, the same thing with Jeff Green. I wish I could remember what that mathematical term was. We used to talk about it all the time. I just can't remember it.
Oh, regression to the mean?
No, yeah, that's what it is. But it's the
law of averages.
No, it's having a higher variable, a differential. Like, essentially is what this is. So you have a Jeff Green with his shooting can be really great or really terrible. With the Sixers, their winning percentage can be really awful or really great.
Yeah, but anyway, we're not talking about bad basketball teams. Well, I guess we're kind of talking about one. But the point of it was, this week was the last time that Kobe Bryant and LeBron James faced off. And that to me is just, it's crazy.
No, the more storyline is that Kobe won the faceoff, kind of. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Kobe scored more than LeBron.
Yeah, that was his best game in 3 years.
Although, if you say, if you look at it, though, watching the game, LeBron kind of went easy at Kobe. I think he only really blew once.
Like, the Cavs are playing the Lakers. Like, you can't expect the Cavs to have their 100% A game against a team that's been mathematically eliminated.
But I think LeBron did. I think that both players came out and really got up for the moment. And, you know, there was that moment, the couple minutes in the second quarter when they were just going at each other. I loved the fact that Kobe was guarding LeBron James.
Yeah. You got to, though. Like you got to let them be able to pay their respects
to
each other.
We talked about it, or we talked about it off the mic. We talked about it a little on the show this week. But, like, one of my biggest what ifs and just unfortunate things that probably should have happened but didn't happen is we never got to see that LeBron Kobe final in either like 2009 or 2010.
Well, we talked about that on a few episodes ago.
Yeah, like, oh, that's just to me. Like, I remember, I'm not kidding, in high school getting into shouting matches with people. Like, once
were you a LeBron or a Kobe?
Well, after a few beverages, but you'd have the, with the LeBron Kobe debate. I said that LeBron was a better player than Kobe at one point. Now, I mean, Kobe was winning titles, so that made it, you know, pretty hard to difficult
right.
or pretty hard to defend sometimes. Right. But because, you know, that was also back when LeBron still had the, you know, can he win the big game narrative, all that crap going, which, you know, we know isn't a thing anymore, thankfully.
He didn't win last year.
Yeah, he's been to 6 straight finals.
there's also just a point to which you can't win, right? Like, it doesn't matter how good you are. Like, if you would have put Steph Curry on the Cavs last year
and LeBron on the Warriors,
the Warriors still would have won.
I am,
that's bold.
This isn't me hating on Curry. We've talked about this, and we talked about this last week, is where I feel like Curry's really, really good, but there's teams that if you put him on, out of all the superstars, I feel like he could be on the least amount of other teams and have them win a title.
Oh, I don't necessarily agree with that at all. I think Curry's on another planet right now. I mean,
how much is that because everyone else on the team is a shooting threat?
Yeah, but it really helps to have Klay Thompson.
Of course it helps to have Klay Thompson. It helps to have Draymond Green. And, like, yeah, of course Curry's in a position to succeed. Like, the Warriors aren't potentially the best team in NBA history just because of Steph Curry. But Steph Curry with some of these shots, how in the world do you defend these? I mean,
but
we're talking about a guy who's basically automatic from 38 feet at this point.
But take Anthony Davis off of the Pelicans and you put Curry there. Could Curry win with that team?
I think Curry could win to an extent with that team, but I don't think
they'd be an eighth seed.
Get him into the playoffs.
Yeah, but I don't think
they'd
go far.
That's what we're... Right. I wanted to bring up, too, before we get too off-topic on this, that Kevin had mentioned on the last episode, what does it mean to make the eighth seed in the playoffs? And I think it means different things for different franchises,
of
right?
Of course.
So if you're the Nets and you're making the eighth seed with a whole bunch of veterans, it means nothing.
Oh, but it's also exciting.
It's not. It means nothing. Mm-hmm. However, if you're a team like the Jazz or the Suns, or when the Sixers finally make that first eighth seed after this drought, that it's going
2026.
Right. It's going to mean a lot. So when you say it means nothing to make the eighth seed, I think that's totally dependent on the team and their trajectory.
Yeah. No, that's fair. Because I think that, you know, I think last year the Pelicans fighting back and making that eight
seed
with Anthony Davis, like, yeah, I think it depends where you are in, like, where you are and what you're trying to be. Like, I think teams getting playoff experience when they're young is big, and I think being that eight seed, even if you get swept, will provide you experience that you can't get elsewhere.
Right, but, like the Grizzlies think, making the eight seed, that means nothing.
My eight seed bashing comes from my 10 years of Sixers basketball where they would go 500, make the 8th seed, maybe win one playoff game a year, and then just go out. And there's just no, like, there's no joy in that.
Right. I got you. Well, bringing it back to this this Kobe-LeBron game, I got it. It was, you know, D'Angelo Russell went off. That was kind of cool. Also, Channing Frye was in for Kevin Love, and Channing Frye looked amazing as a starter with the Cavs.
Yeah, Kevin Love is that's been the big narrative in Cleveland that we're not going to harp on too much, but that's been the narrative, is that Kevin Love, since David Blatt's fired, all his shooting percentages have gone down, especially from beyond the arc.
That was the whole thing with when Lou came in. We were like, oh man, he's going to figure out a way to use Kevin Love. It's going to be great.
Well, get him playing at the elbow. Part of the problem with that is you know, LeBron and Kevin Love both like to play from the left elbow, so you have two players, ball dominant players, who really like to play at the elbow. I think with the Cavs that they're going to have to figure out a way to
not trade, but
play Kevin Love when LeBron's not on the floor intentionally. Like,
but how many minutes is that?
Right.
You know, but they got to find a way to do it. But
why be paying the guy that much money to play like 15 minutes a game?
No, higher minutes, but making sure that Kevin Love, the offense is running through Kevin Love when LeBron's not on the floor. But yeah, I mean, to your point, Justin, once you're in the playoffs, LeBron's playing 40 minutes a game.
Yeah.
So how much can you do that? But I thought that this was Kobe's best game in 3 years. I thought that him and LeBron both really recognized the moment, and they played for the moment, and they understood what it was about. And I just thought it was a really special game to see.
I agree. This has been a fun matchup. It's just one of those reminders that, you know, it's an era of basketball that is, you know, you relive that era one more time of 5 years ago, and you enjoy it because just like that, I mean, Kobe Bryant's not going to be a thing next year. It's moments like this that make you savor, or should savor, you know, the greatness that's currently in the league, where who are maybe towards the end of their careers. You know, it's a reminder that, hey, guys, watch the Spurs every night and appreciate what Tim Duncan has done for 20 years and what Manu Ginobili and Tony Parker have done for, you know, almost as long. And, you know, as these guys, even a guy like Vince Carter, it's like, you know, a guy like Vince Carter or Dirk, who's probably a better example because Dirk's a better player at this point. You know, how great these guys have been for how long, and, you know, how privileged we've been as basketball fans to watch them. Because I know for guys like us, like, we are younger. These are our generation of great players. These are the guys that, you know, we grew up watching and that got us into the game, where, you know, as much as we love Jordan and we love Magic Johnson and Larry Bird, like
that,
and Will,
that was
like,
that wasn't our generation.
Right. At the end of the day, for me and for me and Justin, sorry, Tim, but like when Michael Jordan was winning championships, we were between 1 and 6 years or 1 and 8 years old. Like
I was 15.
You know, so. The Jordan I remember watching play was the Jordan on the Wizards. Like, nobody wants to remember that Jordan.
I remember him playing baseball.
Yeah, yeah, that was a thing. He quit in his prime to play baseball.
And I didn't know it was just minor league, though. Apparently he played in Jacksonville one time.
Yeah, yeah, he played, he was with the White Sox AA team.
Yeah, I thought it was, I thought he was playing major league, but, you know, I mean, I was
Jordan,
15, I don't remember that much.
Jordan
from
Brand, not last year, but the year before, released Jordan 9s that paid homage to that. They were in the team was the Barons, the minor league baseball team they played for, and they released a pair of Jordan 9s, and I think, I'm blanking on the other colorway. Oh, ones maybe, where they released them in that colorway and paid homage to his baseball career. And they had the 45 on the back instead of the 23 like they usually do. And, you're not as much. I know you guys aren't big sneaker heads, but, you know, I thought that was kind of cool that they actually paid homage that happened and was a thing.
You guys were talking about Dirk a little bit ago, and I saw this stat, and so I had to figure it out, and that's why I was kind of quiet for a second. I had to find the stat. Dirk is averaging 24.6 points over his last 5 games, and the Mavs are still losing.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to spend too much time on the Mavs, but now that you brought up the Mavs, so we can all agree the Mavs they're kind of falling right now. I think they've like lost 7 out of the last 10 games or something like that. Mm-hmm. Well, the Grizzlies are now without Mike Conley.
Mm-hmm.
The Grizzlies, if you look at their record, I think their magic number is 10 to make the playoffs. Mm-hmm. But what do they have, like 7 active players? Their 2 point guards that they just signed are both D-League point guards. Who doesn't make the playoffs, the Mavs or the Grizzlies?
I mean, right now the Grizzlies are playing better than the Mavs, for better or for worse. I'm still gonna bank that the injuries catch up,
and Zach Randolph isn't playing right. Or maybe he just came back, but he hasn't been playing either. That's why
he's kind of been hurt all year, though. He's been off and on.
Green McHale or whatever his name is, that's why he's been rising up. He's been playing in his absence, but Mario Chalmers just went down. They don't have any players.
Yeah, yeah, it is
bleak, man.
Yeah, it is bleak for sure, but why don't we get into some mailbag?
Mail call!
You've got mail.
Gather around, everybody!
Oh, boy.
So the first question comes from Cupboard Horsington, which is a fantastic name, by the way.
Cupboard? Was he named after, like, a kitchen?
No, it's C-U-B-B-O-R-D. So no, Tim, he probably wasn't named after a kitchen. Anyway, I say he's got a great name. Tim makes fun of him as he's in the kitchen. But anyway, Cupboard asks, I know no one wants to talk about the Jazz, but is Shelvin Mack the best midseason acquisition? Tripled his points per game, assists, and three-point percentage since he made the move. Also, what happens to the point for Utah when Dante Exum comes back? Burke likely to go, and Nato will probably fall out of the rotation.
I feel like for the first part of that question, Mario Chalmers kind of did fairly similar to the same thing. He was traded and then immediately was really good for the Grizzlies.
Joe Johnson's been a fantastic pickup for the Chiefs. I feel like for Joe Johnson
and maybe even Shelvin Mack, we just need a little bit more time.
No, I disagree on Joe Johnson. I think the Joe Johnson thing's solid. I think the Shelvin Mack thing is solid. Not to get it off of the Jazz, but the Wizards just they just picked up Marcus Thornton, J.J. Hickson, and Markieff Morris. So when you're watching the Wizards play,
they're all good,
but they all look like players have never played together before, and that's kind of hurting the Wizards right now. But I think when you look at the Jazz, at his point with Shelvin Mack, that I think we all said it as soon as that happened, that that was a great pickup for the Jazz.
It's a great pickup.
Fifth-year guy?
Yeah, I'm in agreement with you that I think Joe Johnson is the best midseason pickup, but I think Shelvin Mack is definitely a really solid guy. He's come in and played a lot of minutes for them. As for when Exum comes back, I mean, I think it's pretty clear that they're trying to get rid of Trey Burke, and I think if you can move Trey Burke for the right price,
the top five backup point guards. What were you talking about, Justin? So wrong.
Anyways, but so we're trying to move Trey Burke.
Averaging the third most out of backup point guards. I'm just saying.
Anyway, so Dante Exum, I think we all can agree, probably has the highest upside. So you want to go with him. You invested a number four overall pick, and he just hasn't played. So you don't want to move from that quick. I think, yeah, Nato should fall out of the rotation, or maybe he bumps to that third guard if Mack is your two and Exum is your one and you don't have anybody else next year.
It's not exactly the highest praise.
Yeah. I mean, no, I think Shelvin Mack should be on the team going forward. I think they're clearly going to try to get rid of Trey Burke. I think Burke is the odd man out, put it that way. I think Nato, Exum, and Mack, pending moves and draft, will be their three going into the offseason.
Yeah, I thought that with Mack, too, when he was playing for Atlanta, like he was just buried in the rotation.
Yeah, I mean, he had Jeff Teague and Dennis Schroeder in front of him. Yeah. Like, what are you going to do? Like, those are two starting caliber point guards.
Well, there was somebody else, too, that was ahead of him, and I'm blanking on who it was.
So the next question comes from Dave Massey. Dave asks, has Melo missed his window to be a great player to build around? He's not that old, but it seems like he reached his peak like 2 years ago.
Everyone always wanted Melo to play a LeBron-style game where he's getting his players involved and maybe his personal numbers take a hit. But he's playing better team basketball. He's finally doing that this year, and nobody cares. So to answer your question, Dave, and by the way, thanks again for signing up at SeatGeek and putting in that promo code DISH. But yes, the window's been missed, but I think that he is underrated this year as far as his style of play.
He can still be a really good number two.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no, but I think for the Knicks, it's time to start working around Porzingis. And me and Kevin were talking about this yesterday, but Porzingis has kind of gotten quiet. He just kind of hit that rookie wall.
Well, the rookie wall, and then Kurt Rambis, he's playing Derek Williams for better or for worse ahead of Porzingis and a lot of aspects. And also, we talk about the rookie wall, but how many games are these college players playing?
Exactly.
You're talking about a Ja who's injured right now, quote-unquote injured.
No, he's tore his meniscus. He's injured.
Is he really?
Yeah, he's got to do meniscus.
Because when you told me that, Kevin,
that was before the diagnosis.
Don't treat me like I'm an ass. Well, three or four days ago, when I talked to you,
everybody got push alerts for it. I thought we talked about it.
No, we didn't talk about it.
No, he tore his meniscus. It's real, I promise.
All right, well, a lot.
Then Covington going down.
Covington's out of the hospital, by the way. He tweeted today that he says he's going to obviously be out for a little bit, but he says he's feeling better and he'll be back soon.
Yeah, I tweeted him.
That was terrifying.
I tweeted and said, glad to hear you're doing better, buddy.
Okay.
That's good.
Update. He has yet to respond.
Okay. Dude, he'll appreciate the well wishes, though, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm sure.
So, I mean, bringing it back to the Knicks a little bit, but Kurt Rambis doesn't seem like a huge Porzingis guy, at least in the moment.
I think Porzingis hit the rookie wall, but to Dave's original question, I think if the Knicks are smart, moving forward, they got Porzingis. You're going to have another higher pick this year. You know, you build around your young talent. You build around your flexibility. You sign the right free agents because New York is still a place that a lot of players will want to play in. You know, it's New York City. But in terms of Melo, I mean, yeah, you keep Melo around. He's there. He provides leadership and does all that stuff. But I don't think you can try to build around Melo at this point. It's just the ship has sailed. I think prime Melo, like Dave said, was probably 2 or 3 years ago. And that's not to say he's not a great player still, but I think just where he's at with the Knicks timeline doesn't fit where they'll be. So the next question comes from Stuart O'Kell. He asks, college question for Kevin. After watching Championship Week, I'm expecting Brandon Ingram to go first and Ben Simmons second. Do you agree, and who would you prefer from a Sixers viewpoint? Tim and I had this discussion a little bit before as we came over, in that, you know, Simmons and Ingram are the clear 1-2 in this draft class, and pending some emergence that we haven't seen all year. I don't really know how it would go any other way. I think Brandon Ingram has quietly been rising up boards for a while, and I think that there's a very good chance that I think Brandon Ingram goes number one at this point. I wouldn't be surprised. You know, I think it still depends on the workouts. I don't want to downplay Ben Simmons. Ben Simmons, I think, is going to be a great NBA player for a long time. And I think anybody, if they are able to get him at two, yeah, like I think if anybody's able to get him at two, that he'll fit right in and be fine, and they should be really satisfied with that number two pick. From the Sixers' viewpoint, I think Ingram is probably a little bit better of a fit than Simmons is, only because you have Dario coming over next year. You've already got a wealth of big men. And so, you know, you bring in Simmons. Simmons, realistically, is probably going to be a four in the NBA because he can't really shoot that great.
Yeah,
so you're probably
going to
put him in an athletic
guard?
Four.
Yes.
Yeah, and, and Ingram's a small forward, and that's why I think he fits better.
So why wouldn't the Sixers, apart from the, let's say they were to get the number three pick, wouldn't you guys draft a point guard? Like, who's the best point guard? I don't really follow.
I mean, maybe Jamal Murray. Yeah, probably Jamal Murray right now. But
I mean, because you guys aren't desperate need a point guard.
No, because at the end of the day, Jamal Murray's not a game-breaking talent. I think Ingram and Simmons have the potential to be. And I don't think you draft a superstar because of fit. And in the case of Ingram, like, I think he is a fit. Like, if Ingram's your starting three going forward, you have your three and your five, if nothing else figured out, potentially your four after you clear some things up. Like, the Sixers are also going to have a number of other high lottery picks, so I think they can get a talented point guard with one of their other picks, and in a draft this thin, you can't not take Ingram or Simmons one or two. And in the case of Simmons, like, I think,
well,
Simmons,
I was more asking if you got three.
Yeah, mm-hmm. If the Sixers do draft Ben Simmons, you know, you don't not draft Ben Simmons because you have Dario Saric coming in. I mean, Simmons' upside is way higher than Dario's is, and I think you figure it out later. But I think you want to try to potentially avoid another Jahlil Okafor situation. And that's not, again, not to say that I don't think Ja is a great player, but the fact of the matter is
you kind of contradicted yourself then. You said you're trying to avoid that situation where with the Ja and Embiid and Noel, you sort of have all these players that play the same position. Wouldn't it be smarter for the Sixers to not keep drafting positions that they already have filled?
Well, sure, but at the end of the day, like, Dario hasn't played yet. You don't know what Dario is, and Simmons' upside is just so much higher. I think at that point you don't I understand the concern about it, but I think when the upside is that much higher, you know, your four position isn't figured out at this point, for better or for worse. You don't know who's your long-term power forward.
But between those three players, you don't know who.
I don't think any of them can play the four other than Dario. I don't think Jahlil Okafor or Nerlens Noel can play the four. I think that's been clear as day this year. Ja is too slow on defense to guard power forwards, and Nerlens can't shoot well enough to play a four. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that's
so
just,
you think that you guys have three centers right now?
Yes.
Oh, that's
an issue. And I think that's the issue, and that's the big reason why, like, I'm not in the trade Okafor camp, not to get too far off topic, because I don't think you sell low, but I think that eventually, like, something is going to happen. But I think that's why Ingram, you know, yeah, you have Covington, but we said Covington's ceiling is probably coming off the bench, and I think Brandon Ingram is a potential, you know, the star player you've been looking for. So, but in overall draft, I think it depends on the fit, but I think Brandon Ingram is quietly creeping up, especially the way LSU got just shellacked the other night. I mean, they scored 38 points. That's awful. But I think that I wouldn't be surprised if I see Ingram go one, put it that way. So the next question, speaking of college basketball, comes from Andrew Morgan. He asks, what are your expectations for the NCAA tournament?
Nova. That's all I know.
All right. Well, as the resident college basketball watcher, I guess I'll answer this question. The expectations for this year's, it's March Madness. And this year in particular, it's going to be madness. You know, there's no runaway team this year, the way, you know, Duke kind of was last year, and the way Kentucky dominated all year when they had Anthony Davis. Or you don't have that one team who like Louisville 2 years ago, who seemingly is better than everyone.
Isn't it Louisville?
Well, people who live in Louisville say it's Louisville, but everyone else calls it Louisville. Whatever. Okay. Anyway, the point is, I think everyone, there's not that one team this year. I think North Carolina is really good. I think Villanova is really good. I think Kansas is really good. You know, I think there are a lot of really nice teams, which in terms of sheer entertainment purposes is amazing, because it means the tournament, anybody can win, you know, one game playoffs every single game. That's exactly what you're looking for. And so I'm really excited. I think madness ensuing will be the theme. You know, March Madness will live up to its name this year at the NCAA tournament. And so the final question comes from Pablo Newton Farley. Pablo asks, should Oklahoma City petition the NBA to reduce games to 36 minutes in length?
Yes. Right? Man, they cannot. They can't.
God, it was last night, too, against the Spurs. I watched the whole game, and just in the fourth quarter, I have no idea what they were like. They just stopped. I don't know what offense they were running. It just broke down.
Yeah.
And as soon as it hit the fourth, they just stopped running an offense.
OKC has lost 8 of their last 12.
Also, you missed a good one with your boy Kawhi. Was big last night. Yeah, I don't know if you watched that game, but Kawhi had a really nice game.
No, I didn't. Actually, going into last night's game, Kawhi Leonard has made 50% of his shots in his career.
One of the that's amazing. Yeah, right? One of the ideas floating around the interweb is that OKC is intentionally tanking so they can get their first round matchup against the Grizzlies as that 4-5. I mean, I don't know how true that is. I'm sure it's not. But someone said that, and I was like, that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Right?
Yeah. You don't want to play the Trailblazers, man.
Well, I mean, if you could play any team, wouldn't it be the Grizzlies?
Yeah. Right. That's what, yeah, exactly.
I think
of
the bottom four teams, I think Portland is probably the one I'd want to play the least, just because you never know with Lillard, he checks.
Yeah.
The guys, they shouldn't have snubbed him from the All-Star game.
Well, you say that, but who should have been left off?
No, I mean, I agree. I agreed with that Lillard getting snubbed, but I'm just saying, like, man, the rest of the league should have took notice. One of those coaches, they could have stopped, you know, stopped this monster.
That or the Trailblazers.
Made their playoff lives easier.
That or the Trailblazers coach reached out to the NBA and said, hey, snub Lillard.
Right, just remember, just that one tweet, man, it was so mad. I think the last time they made me mad, game 6. And it's just like, I don't want to play that in the playoffs.
You don't.
But anyways, thank you everyone for sending in your mailbag questions. As always, you can leave us for them on Facebook at Drive and Dish NBA Podcast, on Twitter at Drive and Dish NBA, or on our Instagram page, Drive and Dish Podcast, and we'll read the best ones on the show.
And if you have a chance and you can support the show, download the SeatGeek app, but put in the promo code DISH. You don't even need to buy anything. When you eventually do need to get tickets, though, you'll have that there. You get $20 off your first order. And just downloading the SeatGeek app and putting in promo code DISH supports the show. If you do have a chance, leave us a review on iTunes. If you're in a separate country, tweet us and let us know you did.
Mm-hmm. And if you want to hit up anything we're doing during the week, see what we're up to, our social media, our episodes, everything, just go to driveanddishpodcast.com.
And like we said, our Twitter account, follow us. It's at Drive and Dish NBA. If you're so inclined, you can follow us individually on Twitter. Myself, Kevin, I'm at Refuse to Lose. Tim is at Radio Tim NBA, and Justin is at Justin C on the air. So yeah, hit us up, you know, maybe slide into our DMs.
Not mine.
No.
Okay. I think we've done enough dancing for today. So why don't we dance Wednesday?
Be a star side.
Okay, well, I'm out of here.
Get in the hole.
Da 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 da. Hey. Da 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 da. Hey.
Let's go while we're young.
All right. I think they get the point.